This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix.
I like that. Keep that in.
Phoenix. Which was the name of a town that I drove into to go to high school in Ashland, so I should know better, but...
That's all right.
Order of the Phoenix, chapters 15 and 16. The Hogwarts High Inquisitor and In the Hogshead. In these chapters, Umbridge is given unprecedented authority to instruct her fellow teachers, which ultimately is a conflict, kind of a conflict of interest. You can't have someone who is a teacher. Like, if Fudge was going to do this, he should have pick one, like, make her be the teacher or make her the High Inquisitor. But it looks really, not that Fudge cares at this point, but yeah, it's really yucky that he's getting away with this sort of, like, conflict of interest of have her being both.
Yeah. It's very strange.
And then in the Hogshead, they organize their little rebellion.
It's all happening. Not sure what's happening, but it's happening.
Indeed. So, preliminary thoughts.
So with the Hogwarts High Inquisitor, I kept thinking of, I think you and I both discussed as, like, we have parents that are teachers, and, she very much reminded me of, you know, when somebody comes in to, like, assess the class.
Oh, yeah. And I remember those.
Yeah. So that's kind of, I was like, oh, so I know how much teachers loved that. So that was pretty, pretty interesting and kind of ridiculous. And then, you know, the next chapter, we're kind of getting some more things are kind of forming, and it kind of takes an interesting Hermione poses an interesting idea, and Harry a little resistant, but ultimately, he goes with it. So interested to see where that goes.
Yes. And so given Percy's hint, you know, starting with chapter 15, they thought they would have to, like, read over the Daily Prophet very carefully to try and pick up on what Percy meant. But no subtlety whatsoever. It's just Umbridge's face plastered on the front page.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this was kind of like, I felt like maybe, and it's because I listened to this time. I think you and I kind of both flip-flop reading and listening to it. I don't know how this transpired was pretty interesting and pretty quick, honestly. I felt like there wasn't a lot of buildup to this, her becoming the High Inquisitor. Oh, I had another thought about this chapter, but I'll save it.
Okay. So I just honed in on the term of, like, why high in, like, inquisitor? Like, it just the, again, it's just not, you know, like, Spanish Inquisition and all of those things. Like, I don't know, is there genuinely, like, a sort of inquisitor position? Is that title, like, used in the UK in any capacity? I have no freaking clue. It just goes to show, you know, how, again, authoritarian it is. That,
yeah.
Like, showing, like, I'm the only person whose opinion matters.
Yeah, very much so. And Dolores, I love how McGonagall handles her when we get there, but she definitely thinks her opinion is important. And that was kind of demonstrated at the very beginning when she interrupted Dumbledore. You know, it's a person that you just kind of don't interrupt. And she's like, no, listen to me. So,
And all of what we'll see in this chapter is the age old clash between teachers and administration.
Yeah, that only has been put on blast with the whole pandemic and everything, hasn't it?
Oh, yes. So, you know, luckily my mom retired, so she never had to deal with, like, pandemic, you know, that sort of, oh my God, like, she would have quit in protest. But anyway, so ultimately, summarizing the article is that she's basically becoming this inspector, that she has the power to, you know, rate and pass judgment on other teachers at Hogwarts to make sure that they are up to snuff, shall we say. And I just, for the first time, kind of honed in on who at the Daily Prophet wrote this article. Because if anything, you know, we already know from, like, the rhetoric that Harry's gotten from the Order of the Phoenix that Fudge has a tight hold on the Prophet and they're spinning things the way he wants them to spin. But if anything, I feel like the person who, like, the journalist who wrote this article, in a way, was kind of doing it. Obviously, my headcanon sort of interprets it as this guy, journalist, wanted to create a balanced article, but was forced to a certain extent to, you know, pay lip service to whatever his editor-in-chief, because he's under the thumb of Fudge and blah, blah, blah. Because of the way that even the first paragraph the journalist chooses to say is giving itself an unprecedented level of control at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. And I know probably unprecedented, you know, maybe just purely means, like, you know, unusual or not done before. Mm-hmm. But to me, like, in my idiolect, in my mind, unprecedented is always negative.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've heard a lot of,
because it's used a lot in politics, you know.
Yeah.
And people use it a lot in politics and political science as unprecedented, like Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
Or like people are unprecedented times. It's like, okay.
Yeah,
it wasn't like when stuff's good, you don't usually say that.
I'm so used to unprecedented having such a negative connotation that the fact that the journalist was able to get away with writing the article in this way, you know, kind of be like, okay, like, you know, they couldn't, like, totally. So,
yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Mask growing uneasy about the goings on at Hogwarts. And of course, Umbridge is going to be the High Inquisitor. Of course, we get a stupid quote from Lucius Malfoy, who's like, oh, he's concerned about oh my God, imagine Lucius Malfoy going in front of the school board in Florida about masks.
Oh my God,
with his like snake pimp cane.
That would actually be entertaining. Some of those were just like cringy. That would actually be kind of funny.
Yeah. And also I noticed in the article that, you know, even the article admits that there are two members of the Wizengamot or some other important body, like two of them have resigned in protest of Umbridge's appointment to this position, because they both said like, this is just another, like, ridiculous way to try and undermine Dumbledore. And I'm like, oh yay, like, you know, a balanced, you know, viewpoint.
Yeah.
But then immediately it's like, for Madame Marchbanks, for a full account of Madame Marchbanks' alleged links to subversive goblin groups, turn to page 17. So already they're trying to say that she's not reliable because of, you know, whatever.
Right. They're like saying this is what happened, but we're going to discredit her next couple pages. So yuck.
Yep. And throwing shade at Lupin.
Which I don't think you or I are here for, throwing shade at Lupin. That's awful.
Yeah, so yeah, basically describing Dumbledore's appointments as questionable, involving hiring of werewolf Remus Lupin, half-giant Rubius Hagrid, and delusional ex-Auror Mad-Eye Moody, which technically was not Mad-Eye Moody, but...
Right, yeah. Well, I guess the people on the outside probably don't...
Well, don't know that, because again, Fudge has sent inadvertently killed the real culprit.
Right.
So it's finally put together of why you know, Dumbledore was forced into the position of letting Umbridge teach, because in the article explains that there was an earlier legislation that said that if the headmaster cannot fill a teaching position, the ministry itself will appoint a candidate.
That sounds very 25th Amendment, right? That kind of like, in a way, I mean, I know this is a school, but I think that there was, I remember when Donald Trump was president, people would always say like, let's enact the 25th Amendment. He's just like not fit for office or something like that.
Yeah. So that's how she got to be at Hogwarts in the first place, because quite frankly, you know, it would have been better just to cancel that specific course than to have Umbridge. But, you know, Dumbledore didn't have that option.
Right. Yeah.
And again, showing that Dumbledore, for all of his like physical prowess and magical prowess, like he still has to work within this political system and, you know, has to pick his battles carefully.
Yeah. Yeah. That it's got to be tricky, but I think we all kind of have those situations we can relate to in our own working lives, probably.
Mm-hmm. And so there's that article, and then they go down to, well, first to History of Magic, and then they go down to Professor Snape in his dungeon, and Harry's got a D.
D, a spiky black D. I liked how they described that. I was like, oh, wow. And then we kind of get into the grading system. Like I didn't, it had not been really explained before, but mm-hmm. We definitely kind of picked that apart here.
Yeah. And it's very much implied that the grading system specifically for these examinations do not match like the daily grading system that Hogwarts tends to use, like in everyday, like grading of their assignments.
Got it. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm.
So, because all of this was like new information, it's not like Harry's like, "Oh, I got another D from Snape." Typical.
And he was. I have awarded you the grades you would have received if you presented this work in your OWL. Which, so I mean, Snape, we know already know he's kind of a jackass, but he's basically saying, "I hold your work to a high standard all the time, but now I'm like upping it a level." So,
mm-hmm. And like. Yep, and so Harry's, like, determined not to give Snape an excuse to fail him. Harry read and reread every line of the instructions on the blackboard at least 3 times before acting on them.
Good for you, Harry, because, good for you.
And in terms of, you know, with Hermione, you know, it's kind of her, like, passive aggressiveness and not, or, like, you know, in trying to ask about their grades, but it's just, like, at the same time, you know, with the boys being, like, embarrassed about their grades, like, it's not, it's hypocritical, like, for as much as they rely on her academically, probably to the point that would technically not be, would be considered cheating or inappropriate, like, for as much as they rely on her, it seems kind of weird that suddenly they're all, like, embarrassed and shy and, like, don't want to talk about their grades with her. Like, it's like, you can't have it both. You can't, you know, you can't use her as much as you do and then suddenly want privacy.
Yeah, it definitely. I mean, and I, you know, it kind of paints her in a poor light here, but you're exactly right. Because, you know, in kind of previous chapters, Ron is like kind of looks expectantly at her to help with his homework. So if she's a contributor, she should have like, she should know how her work like was received. So. You're absolutely right. So she was framed very kind of nosy and obnoxious here, yeah. Asking about those grades.
Mm-hmm. And so basically, yeah, we get a breakdown from Fred and George and Lee. So the highest you can possibly get in OWL is an O for outstanding. And I assume these marks have some sort of parallel in the UK system with their exams, I presume. So
have to ask Nat.
Yeah, have to ask Nat. So O is outstanding, the highest. Then you got E for exceeds expectations. And then you got A for acceptable. And those are the 3 passing grades. And then the non-passing grades, you got P for poor, D for dreadful, and T, which according to like the twins means troll. Which it's not in fully implied whether they're joking or not.
Okay. I was going to say it could be terrible, but.
I think dreadful or is worse than terrible or treacherous or.
Yeah, there could be some other. I kind of wondered about that because there are trolls in this world, right? So
yeah, so like, that would be very racist.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, okay, here we are again with the racism, but maybe yeah, they're just so pulling that
terrible,
way.
Tempestuous,
pterodactyl. I just said a T word that I knew.
So. I don't know. Just all T's makes me think of the Try Guys.
Oh, I love the Try Guys. Yes.
I love the Try Guys. I was just watching the video of Keith Habersberger eat everything from Carl's Jr.
Oh, my God. Oh.
His Eat the Menu series.
Oh, that iron stomach right there. That's got to be a lot.
And again, by the time he finishes, it's like he's drunk. He's just so loopy on all this like fast food.
That's I like him. He's
good. Anyway, so they go once we've dealt with the grading system, and then they go to divination, and that's and Umbridge is there to observe Trelawney. How do you feel about, you know, despite, you know, various ups and downs with Professor Trelawney, so how do you feel how she was treated in regards to her inspection?
I feel like there's pretty consistent like disdain for, you know, her practice or her class, and I don't think Umbridge really respects it. Umbridge, this is again why Umbridge is such an interesting character, is she's kind of putting on a farce, you know, here. Like, I think she kind of has that facade, but Trelawney is definitely very offended by being questioned. You know, the kids can question her and it's kind of like, whatever. But, you know, Umbridge, I don't know. I don't think she is painted in a good light either. I think Umbridge kind of is not nice to Trelawney, but that seems pretty consistent with everybody else. There are only a couple of people I think that we've met that have been decent to Trelawney.
Yeah, well, I think one way in which I'm really on Trelawney's side in this inspection is when Trelawney's like, you know, the future cannot be, like, summoned at a whim.
Yes.
Which for, you know, for all of, you know, I'm not the most, in terms of my paganism and witchcraft, I'm kind of low in terms of the magic spectrum. But even if I want to, like, extend the argument of, like, you know, there is, like, you know, people can have psychic abilities or divinatory, you know, abilities, yada, yada, yada. Even if I were to accept that completely without reservation, I would also agree that, yeah, like, the future and that sort of, like, quote-unquote art form is not something that you can summon, and that a seer is like a cocktail waitress to summon your future whenever you damn well feel like it.
I mean, that's what people wish, you know, and that's, I think that makes
sense. Well, and that's what people point to be right. Like, oh, it's all hogwash.
Right, right. Yeah, I watched a movie this weekend that's kind of on brand with the gothicness, Nightmare Alley. Check it out if you like gothic things. But basically he's a con man, like seer.
Mm-hmm. So he uses his ability to be to con people,
and yeah, or he manipulates people into believing that, you know, anyway, it's a very interesting story, and if you like gothic literature, I think I would recommend it. I'm kind of obsessed with it right now, so it's on Hulu and HBO Max.
Oh, I do have Hulu, so I may have to check it out.
Cool. Yeah.
Alrighty then, and so yeah. We've got, you know, Umbridge and Trelawney going at it. And then let's see, who do we have? What happens after Trelawney?
So we continue go through. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
They go to their own defense against the Dark Arts teacher, or defense against the Dark Arts class. And Hermione, and it's like, oh, we did chapter one, and now we're going to do chapter two. Like, oh my God, worst pedagogy ever.
yes, yeah. This whole scene,
I know, this just reminded me of, there was an instance in my high school where there was one teacher, like a social studies like teacher, who clearly was shoved a class, the world history or world cultures class that I was a part of, clearly got shoved on him when he wasn't prepared, and all we ended up doing is watching like movies. And it's not that this guy wasn't a good teacher. Like, he taught my American history class, you know, and, you know, when I was a sophomore and did it decently. But, you know, the junior, senior year when I took this class, clearly just wasn't prepared for it and didn't have time for it. And it just totally, you know, spiraled into this pathetic, you know, either just reading or watching movies.
Yeah, that was most of my high school
religion. And it was like blockbuster movies, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just really stupid things. And it's like you could have at least just gotten like intellectual documentaries to discuss the things.
I had a similar experience in my religion class. You know, I went to Catholic school and you go there. It's not, you know, it's not a public school. And we go into the religion class where I would have appreciated learning some theology or anything about the Catholic religion. But no, we watched like Speed and, you know, like what the hell? So.
So this is what the class has degenerated to, just silent reading. And Hermione keeps raising her hand and Umbridge is like, what? And she's like, I've read chapter 2, then read chapter 3. I've read chapter 3. And she's like, then chapter 4. I've read the whole book.
Of course she has. Of course she has.
And Umbridge quizzes her and she's like, oh, blah, 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 blah. Like counter jinxes. He says counter jinxes are a false, like, idiom to make certain jinxes appear like more like socially acceptable.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I disagree.
Yeah.
Which, and really Umbridge doesn't have any sort of logical counter argument to give her. It's just, you know, your opinion doesn't matter. This is a ministry approved, whatever. Like it's not using, you know, critical thinking to sway someone to your, you know, way of thinking. It's just like, you know, shut up. You don't know anything.
Right. And just blind allegiance to her teaching methods, which, where does this go? It ends up with Harry popping off, whatever, and getting detention again.
Yeah. Which would have, the thing that sets Harry over the edge is, you know, Umbridge's comment that, like, none of, you know, your previous teachers have given you so much license to just do and think whatever, with the exception of Professor Quirrell. Mentioning Quirrell again is just like, nope, Harry's done.
Right. Well, which is so stupid. Like, I mean, it's like she's baiting him, basically. I feel like there's a little bit of that.
And what's just interesting about this is, you know, she gives him detention, but at this point, like, you know, everyone disagrees with Harry and Dumbledore about is the current present of Voldemort being back. As far as we know, no one disputes the fact that Quirrell was in cahoots with Voldemort. And even right. Dumbledore, when Harry wakes up in book one, he's like, what happened between you and Quirrell is a complete secret. So naturally, the entire school knows.
Right.
So, like, that is public knowledge, and no one has disputed that. So, if anything, like, Harry's not trying to say Voldemort's back. Harry's just going back to recent history that is not being disputed. But it's just, again, the sense of you're bringing up Voldemort again, even though it's not in a way that's the contested, you know, point right now, but still that's enough to, you're not supposed to talk about Voldemort at all, even if it's about the past that is we'd all know to be factually true.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's just so strange. I don't know. And then, I mean, I really was surprised that Harry was back in detention, but there he was. And I mean, of course, Umbridge was going to be like, anytime he challenges her, he's obviously going to end up in detention. But the reactions from other characters is interesting this time, too.
Yeah, well, Angelina Johnson is blowing up at Harry. He's like, you got in detention again over, and we're going to have quit. You're going to miss so much Quidditch, blah, blah, blah. And then McGonagall finds out, and she's like, more, you know, I told you, you know, to keep your head down. You lost your temper again. He's like, yes. And she's like, 5 points from Gryffindor. And it's like, why do you have to take points as well? Because detentions do not appear to have any effect whatsoever. And just her saying this, not knowing the context of Umbridge's detentions, is just so sad.
It is sad. It's all. Do you think that there's a little bit of her like being a little irritated that he can't go to Quidditch practice too? Like
oh,
part of that.
Oh yeah, McGallion.
Yeah.
I think there probably is, but I think I like to think that as much as we, you know, we poke fun at McGonagall for her secret like Quidditch gambling habits.
Yeah.
That she is genuinely thinking, like, you know, if he continues this, it could get to a point where, you know, the Minister Umbridge trumps up some claim that Harry is unstable and, like, you know, get him committed.
Yeah. I think it's really a protection thing from her in this and her frustration, because she knows the stakes, you know, and she knows that, like, Harry's got a temper and he keeps, you know, challenging her. And it's kind of like, they're just like, just kind of swallow your pride and your ego for a little bit. I know it's really hard, but you know, you don't quite realize the danger you're putting yourself into. Or so, I really think it comes from that little bit of maternal.
Yeah. Care. And it's like, and again, the classic maternal, again, well, I don't know, what do you call it, maternal, like, victim blaming, where it's like your parent or guardian figure or adult is concerned about you, but knowing that they cannot change the unfair world, they focus in on, you know, telling you to control your behavior. And then, of course, the recipient of that feels, you know, demoralized. And again, like, blaming a victim.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So then we've got that. And then we also get to see Umbridge inspect McGonagall. So do tell me how you felt.
I mean, I just love this because McGonagall is definitely, she's professional, but she still is like not going to take any of Umbridge's shit. She's just like, stop interrupting me, you know? And I think that was really good for, you know, people to see, like, when it's my class, it's my turn to talk. So sit there and actually observe, instead of popping off all the time. So,
yeah, because I remember there was one woman I used to work with in the Turkish program, and we went on a business trip, and, you know, we went on a classroom visit, and the woman just, you know, like the coworker, not that she was a bad person, but she just kept interrupting and talking to the teacher and talking to the students. And, you know, I wasn't as secure in myself as like a supervisor at that point to, like, you know, call her out on it, whether at that moment or later. But I remember thinking that, you know, the whole point is for this to be an observation where we don't say anything, so we can see the class as organically as is possible with two strangers standing there. And the fact that she was, you know, just, you know, constantly, you know, talking and, you know, making her presence known, like, was just, I'm just like, right. No.
That, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of undermines the teacher too, and obviously, well, and I think Umbridge, that's what she's trying to do, but McGonagall's like, no.
Just like, I wonder if you got my notes saying the time and date and time of your inspection. Obviously, I received it, or I would have asked you what you were doing in my classroom.
Exactly. Yeah, she's got a handle on.
And she's like, I wonder how you expect to gain an idea of my usual teaching methods if you continue to interrupt me. You see, I do not generally permit people to talk when I am talking. And the way Jim Dale just utters each and every syllable.
Yes, it's awesome. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's really nothing that Umbridge can do. And she's just like, you know, very well, you will receive your results of your inspection in 10 days' time. I can hardly wait, said McGonagall in a coldly indifferent voice.
That was, listening to the audio book of that interaction was great too.
Mm-hmm. And then they go down to Grubbly Plank for Care of Magical Creatures, and Umbridge is also there.
She's just everywhere. And this one was kind of pretty like, whatever, you know? I mean, the only thing that I think stood out here was Professor Grubbly Plank was like, oh yeah, Dumbledore's excellent. Like, it's almost like completely oblivious in a way.
Yeah, she's like, yeah, Dumbledore is awesome. And it's like, well, you seem to know what you're doing, which is, again, going in that same vein of, you know, again, like there are genuine, you know, legitimate criticisms to be held by, you know, the type of creatures Hagrid has brought in the past. but it's natural that, you know, the fact that, not that Grubbly Plank's lessons are bad or, like, again, like, undermining or inadequate the way Umbridge's classes are in the DADA subject, but just the fact that they are, you know, not handling dangerous creatures, that aligns with the ministry's current agenda of not having, letting them have the ability to take on anything of substance, be it a wizard or a creature.
Yeah, it's not really helping them. It's not really challenging them, really, literally.
Mm-hmm. So we've got that. And then finally, Hermione, after seeing all these inspections and, like, feeling the encroaching power of Umbridge seep into every aspect of the school, like the Soviets, slowly creeping up.
Yes, true.
She's like, okay, we've got to do something. We got to, like, take, you know, take this into our own hands. And she proposes the idea, we're beyond just learning things in books. We need a teacher. We need Harry.
I didn't expect that. Like, for when I was coming across that, I was like, who are they going to pull? Like, Sirius is too, like, dangerous. And then that surprised me too. So
how did you feel about it once they, like, were talking through it and Harry's kind of initial negative reaction?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. And Hermione does talk through it and helps the reader understand, you know, why it makes sense. And I can understand Harry's kind of like, wait a minute, because he's thinking too of a professor in the capacity of, like, you know, previous dark arts professors, people that have a foundational, you know, have gone to school or whatever, have learned this trade, instead of just kind of actually just kind of having an ability. Like, I think it's brought up that, you know, you produced a Patronus and that was not something that's really easy to do. You're kind of the perfect teacher. And eventually he kind of is like, I mean, okay. Cause ultimately it's not just about him. It's bigger than him. And I think Harry kind of always leans into things that, you know, the only kind of time I think he really does things for the glory of himself, and which isn't completely true, is playing Quidditch, but then you're playing for a team still. So,
Yep. And it's fun. And, you know, to further illustrate her point of how skilled Harry is, Hermione's like, even Victor has said that, you know, Victor was like 2 or 3 years older and there were things that Harry could do that he couldn't do.
Yeah. And then what are they like? You're still talking to Victor?
Yeah.
That's like what Ron hears.
I was old Vicky. And she's like, ho, ho. And it's like, what's wrong? I can have a pen pal if I want. He didn't want to just be your pen pal.
She knows that, Ron.
Again, she should have gone to Sophia.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. But, again, for all those listeners, to distract myself from the dumpster fire of my life, I'm currently learning 4 languages. You know, I'm learning Persian because my husband is Iranian. I'm learning Portuguese because Nat in Game of Thrones podcast is Brazilian. I'm learning Romanian and for the hell of it, and I'm also learning Bulgarian. But one upside with learning Bulgarian, my Victor and Hermione fanfics will be culturally and linguistically accurate.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. And so there will be anyway, many so Hermione's like, please just, like, think about it, like, sleep on it. And that's where the chapter ends.
Cool.
And then we've got chapter 16, In the Hog's Head.
Blech.
Which, you know, it's just funny because every year at my job, there is an annual meeting, and the city in which the annual meeting is held changes, you know, because we're a national program at various universities. And so one of our programs from a certain university hosts it each year. So in 2018, you know, I work with the Arabic program, but the Portuguese program at University of Georgia in Atlanta, Georgia, or not Atlanta, Athens, Georgia, I think. Anyway, small town in Georgia. But anyway, so finished up with the meetings one day, go downtown. There are literally 3 like pubs with like hog and pig names, like the Pig's Tavern or like the Hog's Foot. And I like literally there were 3 of them. And I'm just like, okay, if we're doing this, where the hell is the Hog's Head?
Right, right. That's funny. That's well, I was thinking of hogs.
Yeah, well, it was the deep south with the you know, comfort food, which I guess they use a lot of pork.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Piggly Wiggly if you saw one of those grocery stores down there, but
no, I keep no, on I the didn't pig that. So anyway, I digress about, you know, with the hog's head. So Hermione lets Harry think about this for a good 2 weeks.
Give him his time. That's fine. He makes a good decision.
Before addressing the issue again. And Harry's like, you know, I think so. I think it'll be okay just teaching you guys. And Hermione's like, no, we should probably ask other people if they want, because it's not fair to just like teach us and not others. Oh, the thing with Victor is actually in the beginning of this chapter, not in.
Well, they kind of blur together.
They blur together because they basically thematically we pick up the same thing, even though it's only 2 weeks later.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it's like, okay, what we can do is we can go to Hogsmeade and meet up with some people there. And Ron's like, why do we have to do it outside of school? Because, said Hermione, returning to the diagram of the Chinese chomping cabbage she was copying, I don't think Umbridge would be very happy if she found out what we were up to.
I mean, come on, Ron, you ding dong. That was a pretty ding dong thing to say. It makes sense to me even. So come on.
Yep. So the sun rises on the weekend for the Hogsmeade visit, and Harry is kind of freaking out and a little anxious because he's worried that Sirius is going to throw caution to the wind and just be like, screw vaccines and masks. I'm going to go out and do what I want anyway.
I mean, it's kind of devil may care attitude a little bit. He's kind of known for, so it wouldn't be too surprising.
Yeah. And, you know, Hermione and Ron are trying to comfort him. You know, Ron's like, you know, Sirius listens to Dumbledore, even though he doesn't always like what he hears.
Man, that's, I don't know. That's an interesting sentence.
So. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so they're heading out, and Filch is, you know, checking the list to make sure he has permission to, you know, be in Hogsmeade, which he has permission because Dumbledore has that note that says, I, Sirius Black, godfather yes. to Harry Potter, give him permission to go visit Hogsmeade on the weekends.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I'm glad they kind of reminded yep. you of that.
There. Yeah, and then... And Hermione's like, oh, what was that for with you and Filch? And he's like, oh, he probably thought I smelled like dong bombs. And proceeds to tell the story of what happened in his interaction with Cho and Filch at the Owlery. And Hermione is much more intrigued by this than Harry was. And naturally, Harry's version of and interpretation of the event is very much clouded by the much more interesting, well, to him, more happier instance of Cho.
As I've said many times, I am a romantic, so I understand where he's coming from. Yes. So, but yeah, yeah. Her interest kind of surprised me.
So yeah, so Hermione is a little kind of perturbed by this, but you know, they're going out and it's like, where are we going to meet everyone? The Three Broomsticks? And she's like, oh no, no, it's always packed and really noisy. I told the others to meet us in the Hogshead, the other pub, you know, the one that's not on the main road. I think it's a bit, you know, dodgy. Or as in dodgy. America... In America, we would call it like sketchy.
Sketchy or seedy. I think.
Or shady.
Yeah, shady. That's, dodgy yep. is a good word.
Yep. So they go in and the bay windows were so encrusted with grime that very little daylight could permeate the room, which was lit in with the stubs of candles sitting on rough wooden tables. The floor seemed at first glance to be earthy, though Harry stepped onto it and realized that there was stone beneath what seemed to be the accumulated filth of centuries.
Ugh. Though this does remind me of, like, it's like the gothic neighborhood bar is kind of what it reminds me of.
Where you get all the local dirt.
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Yeah, we're not exactly. supposed to gothic geek out yet.
I know.
But it was the obvious choice, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
So now Harry understands why, you know, at first it seemed absolutely crazy and totally out there that Hagrid would just miraculously be able to win a smuggled dragon egg in a game of cards. But now that he sees the actual atmosphere of the Hogshead sub, it's like, oh, this is where all the shady people do their business.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the proper folk don't go in there. So.
Mm-hmm. So. We get a couple of Hermione's like, oh, some others will be joining us. So it's Neville, Dean, Lavender, Pavarti and Padma Patil, Cho and one of her friends, Luna Lovegood, Katie Bell, Alicia Spinnett, Angelina Johnson, Colin and Dennis Creedy, Ernie McMillan, Justin Finch-Fletchley, Hannah Abbott, and a Hufflepuff girl with long hair, and Ravenclaw's Anthony Goldstein, Michael Corner, and Terry Boot, Ginny, followed by a tall, skinny blonde boy that Harry only knew as a member of the Hufflepuff Quidditch team, Fred George Weasley, and their friend Lee Jordan.
So this is not just like a few people. This is like... Oh, man. Like
this is like a whole class.
Yes. Yeah. And Hermione kind of like, this is something I don't like that people do. It's like, oh, it's just you and me and somebody else. And then it's like, you know, as an introvert, that's like, I hate that. Like, don't surprise me with people.
Yeah. So, like, that's why I'm, you know, I'm like to be, you know, with when I host parties, I like to be very firm and be like, you know, everyone is allowed a plus one or not.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I, as an introvert, I appreciate that because that's as if I were Harry in this situation, I'd be like, are you effing kidding me? Hermione, I would have been so mad. I mean, but the stakes, other than just my social awkwardness and being uncomfortable, yeah, are much higher. Like,
and in this instance, it kind of, you know, we all at the sort of like, you know, school gossipy, like relations between boys and girls, like Hermione is portrayed as the more emotionally intelligent one. But if it isn't just petty school squabbles, here is Harry is demonstrating that he has a little more emotional intelligence and psychological intelligence than Hermione has. Because Hermione is just thinking, oh, she's so happy that, you know, all these people are interested in learning Defense of the Dark Arts. But Harry is smart enough to realize that, you know, based on who is involved in organizing this, aka him, he is able to predict what basically happens, that, you know, a good chunk of people are there because they want to hear his crazy story and mock him for it.
Yeah, they want the tea.
Yeah, they want the tea to be spilt.
Yes, exactly.
And so Hermione tries to start the meeting, you know, but just saying that, you know, this, we want to learn Defense Against the Dark Arts, like for real, not this crap that Umbridge is trying to give us. And, you know, because no one could call that Defense Against the Dark Arts, well, I thought it'd be good if we just took matters into our own hands, you know, and by that I mean learning how to defend ourselves properly, not just in theory, the real spells, and because Lord Voldemort is back.
Right, and then they kind of go into some of that. I think doesn't Harry kind of relays the tale of... of what happened, because he doesn't.
No, he does. He purposely doesn't, because, you know, because Hermione's again slowly starting to realize what Harry is able to recognize immediately, and she's just trying to organize again, trying to treat it very much like a club and be like, yeah, oh, we should. How are we going to do this? How are we going to organize? And then, of course, this guy who ends up being Zachariah Smith, and he's like, "Where's the proof that you know who's back?"
Yeah.
And it's like, well, Dumbledore believes it. You mean Dumbledore believes him. Who are you? Said Ron rather rudely. Zachariah Smith. And I think we've got the right to know exactly what makes him say, you know, who's whack. And I'm just like, you don't know Harry for Adam.
And, oh, okay, so does nobody knows who this person is? Or
I'm just saying, like, you know, he's not friends with Harry. He's not in Harry's social circle. Like, I guess his level of entitlement... Which, yeah, if you want to be very generous, if I remember when Amanda and Kevin covered this, like, taking a slightly more charitable perspective that Zachariah Smith probably was friends with Cedric, you know, as a member of the Hufflepuff Quidditch team and probably would like to know what happened, even though he's going about it in a very, like, immature and aggressive and mean way.
Right, right. That... I guess he's a little defensive because he lost his friend.
Yeah, if that's so, the approach. You know, basically, and, you know, Harry's just, like, shutting this down. And it's just like, I'm not, you know, I saw him, you know, the whole school, Dumbledore told the whole school what happened last year. And you didn't believe him and you don't believe me. And I'm not wasting my time in a whole afternoon trying to convince anyone. And it's like, all Dumbledore told us last year was that Cedric Diggory got killed by you-know-who and that you brought Sid Diggory's body back to Hogwarts. He didn't give us details. He didn't tell us exactly how Sid Diggory got murdered. I think we'd all like to know. And it's just like,
Isn't that gross? Like, that's what the people
it's,
are
after. Again, even as a it's hard to forgive that, even if you're trying to take a more charitable stance. It's just like, I think we'd all like to know. It doesn't seem to be coming from a, again, just wanting the tea. Like, not from a genuine, I need closure because my good buddy was killed and I don't know how.
Well, and everybody seems to be forgetting that, like, Cedric's girlfriend's right there. Like, because the girlfriend, you know, Cho's right there. I'm sure she has some kind of, like, feelings about all this. Like, I don't know if I would want the explicit gory details on my, you know, boyfriend's death. But, I know she's here willingly, but.
Yeah. If you've come to hear exactly what it looks like when Voldemort murders someone, I can't help you. You know, I don't want to talk about Cedric Diggory, all right? So if that's what you're here for, you might as well clear out.
Good for him. Shutting it down.
And so Hermione's trying desperately to steer it back to, you know, the actual club, like, organizational logistics. And we get this sort of piping up from the Hufflepuff girl that said, can you produce a Patronus, a corporeal Patronus? And Harry's like, do you know Madam Bones? And she's like, she's my auntie. I'm Susan Bones.
Back with the bones.
And so this sparks the whole, like, you know, everyone chiming in to, like, you know, an instance of whenever Harry was being a badass in the previous books.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just trying to find where we're at. Sorry.
And with Cho ending that, not to mention all the tasks he had to get through in the Triwizard Tournament.
Right.
And so Harry and Midge is originally, like, trying to, like, say, like, you know, it's not that I'm just a badass and so great, like, I had help. And then Zachariah's like, are you trying to weasel out of showing us any of this stuff? It's like, you know, again, there are a variety, you know, certain Hogwarts houses, you know, they can be good or bad. Hufflepuff is definitely the house that has the most sort of moral affinity to quote-unquote goodness and kindness. So how this motherfucker is a Hufflepuff remains a mystery to me.
Pretty diabolical Hufflepuff, I guess. He's a...
Like,
he's
the only way he could be, like, a Hufflepuff if he's just, like, hardworking. Otherwise, he shows absolutely none of the other decent Hufflepuff tributes.
No, I actually kind of forgot he
maybe
was
he's that. Just hardworking at being an asshole.
That could be. Could be. God, you can be hardworking at a lot of things.
Well, we've all turned up to learn from him, and now he's telling us he can't really do any of it. That's not, like, I hate people like Zachariah Smith who, like, it's one thing to be, like, quote-unquote the devil's advocate, like, you know, there's a difference between it, you know, for genuine, like, debate and conversation. And then, you know, those people who will say anything, whether they believe in it or not, just to, like, be a shit starter.
Right. Yeah. I don't like that either. I know some people really do get it. And I think culturally that's how conversation works. Like, people challenge each other. And I would probably.
Like the English banter.
The English banter, like, I've heard, like, I don't know anything about this, but, like, the French people like to kind of question what you're saying. So that's just not, I mean, shit, my parents are Southern. That's not the way I roll. So anyway, that's but yes, I agree. I don't particularly like people like that. I'm thinking of awkward social situations I've been in where I'm just like, just let's just move on. That's what I'm like to say. So, but thankfully the Weasleys kind of come to Harry's defense and, you know, they're like, dude, back off, you know?
Yep. And then, you know, everyone's like, you know, you're right. You know, this needs to not interfere with Quidditch. We need to, you know, be able to defend ourselves. And then Ernie's like, yeah, I don't get how Dumbledore could let this woman teach us in our OWL year. And then Hermione's like, well, we think that because Fudge is so deluded that he thinks Dumbledore is wanting to raise his own private army.
Which is what they're getting ready to do anyway.
And Luna says, well, it makes sense because Fudge has his own army. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, he hasn't. Yes, he has. What are heliopaths? They're spirits of fire. great tall flaming creatures that gallop across the grounds, burning everything in front of them. Honestly, this made me think of like the jinn in Islam, like basically super badass fire angels.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of spooky horses. So.
Oh, spooky horses?
but yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, and it's like, and where's the proof of that, snapped Hermione? There are plenty of eyewitness accounts. Just because you're so narrow-minded, you need to have everything shoved under your nose before you. Which is interesting, because, you know, when we first met Luna and, you know, Hermione was talking shit about the Quibbler, and she's like, my father is the editor. Like, and she says it pretty coldly, but pretty briskly, and, like, kind of removes herself from the conversation, like, you know, verbally, if not physically. I think this is the first time, you know, that Luna shows any sort of, like, anger and, yeah, like, insulting Hermione's, like, narrow-mindedness. Which, again, in the light of all the misinformation out there now, I am, as much as I adore Luna, I am more critical of her. So, like, again, like, I don't think there's anything, like, quote-unquote wrong with believing in heliopaths, like this sort of like mild like cryptozoology. I don't think that hurts anyone. But again, like the political misinformation of saying that Fudge has a whole army of these things, you know?
Yeah.
Like saying there's a fucking microchip in the vaccine, as if your own smartphone wasn't enough.
Exactly. Yeah. We got already. Like, stop worrying about a microchip in the vaccine. Yeah, I think, you know, I know you've said that Luna's kind of controversial in this way. And I kind of still haven't really pinned down, you know, I'm glad Luna's kind of challenging Hermione. I feel like it's nice to see a fellow female student kind of be like, just because that's, you know, we already know Luna and Harry can both see things that not every student can see. And that doesn't mean like they're hallucinating, that we know of. They might just have additional sight. Mm-hmm. But we know how much Hermione hates stuff like that. Like, if she can't prove it, then it doesn't exist. So I don't know.
Yep. And so ultimately they decide, Hermione summons this sort of parchment and she's like, yeah, so, you know, why don't you sign your name? And I think we should all agree that, you know, if you sign your name, you're making the commitment that you're not going to go like blasting to Umbridge or anyone else that we're like doing this club.
All right. I've got a lot of problems with things, but I was like, Hermione, why are you not thinking this through? Why is she having everybody sign something? That just was like, which she was challenged on that, but yeah.
Yeah. Why? Because Hermione is a type A and she needs order and she needs records and all those things, which,
right, yeah, I just thought it was like, if I there's just this undercurrent of like they shouldn't be doing this, and so then it's like, here are all the people that shouldn't be doing this. Like, if Umbridge got a hold of this, like, they're done.
Yeah. And so they finally all agree to sign, and, you know, they all leave the Hogshead, and Ron's like, that Zachariah bloke's a wart.
He's not wrong.
Like him much either, but he overheard me talking to Ernie and Hannah at the Hufflepuff table, and he seemed really interested. Like, so what could I say? But the more people, the better, really. I mean, Michael Corner and his friends wouldn't have come if he hadn't been going out with Ginny.
Dun, dun, dun.
And obviously, Ron does not take this well.
Yeah, he becomes the protective brother here.
It's always interesting because I have no brothers. I only had an older sister. So, like, this sort of, like, you know, played for gags, like, overprotective brother is an amusing dynamic to me because I just never had to experience it in my own life.
My brother almost punched a guy at a bar one time who wouldn't leave me alone. So brothers are good to have sometimes.
Yes. And he's like, which one was Michael Corner? He's like, the dark one. I didn't like him. Big surprise. And he's like, I thought Ginny liked Harry. And she's like, oh, Ginny gave up on Harry years ago. And Harry's just like, oh, that's why she can talk to me now. And she's like, yes.
Yeah. This is, it's just cute. This end is just cute.
Yep. And it's like, you know, Ron, this is exactly why Ginny hasn't told you. She knew you'd take it badly, so don't harp on about it, for heaven's sake.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. And then, speaking of Michael and Ginny, what about Cho and you? What do you mean? Said Harry quickly. Well, she just couldn't keep her eyes off you, could she?
Yes. And then how does this Harry had never before appreciated just how beautiful the village of Hogsmeade was. Oh, love.
Young love.
Oh, young love.
And I'm just curious, and Kevin has asked of this, like, what was the beginning? Like, what was the hog that made this whole area named after hog things? Hogwarts, Hogsmeade, Hogshead.
Maybe, like, that's, yeah, maybe the, yeah.
Because it's never really explicitly said which came first, the town or the school.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, but again, like, and not, but none of the, like, school mascots are boars or pigs.
Now I'm thinking about that, because I was thinking, I wonder if, like, parsing out the what it all means. I mean, I know what a hog is. I'm like,
yeah,
complete idiot. But
yeah, and then, and not even in the, like, in the Hogwarts, like, technical motto on, like, the Hogwarts, like, crest, it says in Latin, it's just something funny, like, never tickle a sleeping dragon.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, like, you know, because, you know, the whole thing, all those, like, you know, Oxford, Cambridge, they have all those, like, you know, little slogans in Latin, like veritas and, like, light and truth and whatever shit.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but theirs is a funny, like, never tickle a sleeping dragon in Latin. And so, yeah, so there's not even a mention of a boar or a hog there. So, yeah, I don't know. We never know. And just trying to think anything else. Just, yeah.
A lot of hog stuff, a lot of making me a little nervous with all of a sudden all these students are in a bar. And I know when we're talking about bars, it's different, but I just think trouble is coming. Like, congregating in this place, it's not like people don't notice, especially shady people that have information to trade. Something's going down.
Ooh.
I predict something will happen.
Yeah, I deliberately avoided, like, because a lot of, like, unspoiled, if a co-host is unspoiled, then, like, there's always, like, a prophecy exercise, but I deliberately leaned away from that, because I feel like that's been done too much, and it's not the whole dynamic of this show. But yeah, I'll make note of that. Like, you know, people are going to sell or trade information because, like, shady people are going to, like, use this information of all these kids there.
Something's going to happen. You can't congregate that many Hogwarts students in a hog's head. God, I didn't realize all the hogs until now. You're making me realize it.
Yeah, on a Hogsmeade weekend trip.
Triple all
the
hogs.
Hogwarts students visited the hog's head on the Hogsmeade weekend.
Oh my God. Too many hogs.
Alrighty then. And now we move on. Well, we kind of already kind of did. Gothic geek out.
It's hard to not say Hogshead is got very strong. Like, I think it's a gothic, like, dive bar. It's really kind of sums up exactly what I think about that.
Yeah. Like, I especially, you know, a big trope in gothic literature, if it's the type that's not so much urban as more countryside, is, you know, the newcomer goes into the bar and either the people look really dodgy, like all these people in the hog's head, and they either completely ignore the guy, or the bartender and others, like, start to tell him about the local legends or the local scandal. And yeah. So they get at least a fragmented picture of the plot that is going to come, whether that's with ghost or murder or whatever.
Yeah, this is a place with a story or stories, definitely. Made me think of Game of Thrones, but what's the bread maker guy's name? I already forgot.
Baker?
Yeah, the baker. The breaker. It's late and I can't form words.
Breaker of chains and mother of dragons, but that's something else.
Yeah, he he gives Arya like a loaf of bread
that's shaped like the wolf.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, what's his name? Like, not Podrick. I forget his name, but I know.
Yeah. Who he's talking about. Okay. It just reminds me of that scene in Game of Thrones. Cause I mean, there are lots of bar scenes in Game of Thrones, but kind of a.
Yeah. Tyrion gets captured in a bar, but yeah, Hogshead is definitely that super shady bar where people go to, you know, do their shady dealings. And yeah, there's really not much to say beyond that.
Nothing else was really super gothic, I didn't think.
No, there wasn't. Okay, and now we move on to Tarot of the Day, which the tarot card that I picked out was the Three of Cups.
All right.
So Three of Cups is a card of celebration, friendship, sisterhood, and creative collaborations. Your friends and family are here to support you and lift you up to even higher levels of success. Celebrate with them and enjoy their camaraderie. Like, yeah, so this is basically the ultimate, like platonic friendship card. Because it always shows three people holding their, like, holding their cups up in a sort of toast in a celebratory manner. And so in a lot of ways, like, a lot of people think of, like, the Sex in the City, like, just all the, you know, the heroines, you know, running around having fun and still being supportive of each other. So this card reminds me of the wonderful connections shared by the four, the four female characters in Sex in the City. Okay, so this is the same website where I, like, got, where I, you know, kind of studied this meaning before. They stand by each other through thick and thin, and they are always there for one another as they make their way through these relationships, careers, and difficult life journeys. Nearly every episode shows them enjoying each other's company, often over a cosmopolitan at a swanky Manhattan restaurant. When the Three of Cups appears in a tarot reading, you are encouraged to gather with your closest friends and have a good time together, talking, laughing, sharing, and creating. Together, you give and receive the love, support, and compassion each of your needs from one another. So, obviously, it's kind of interesting because, you know, using the example of, like, female friendship, Sex in the City, and also the celebratory nature of, you know, going out on the town in Sex in the City. So, like, we've got our golden trio being supportive of Harry and acknowledging, you know, you're a really good teacher and you could actually solve this problem for us. But also, and it's just kind of funny because they're, in terms of all their rebellion, they're doing this at a bar.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
They should have been doing this over Cosmopolitans.
What is the what is the Wizarding World equivalent of Cosmopolitan? I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure there's a recipe of something out there. That's exactly what I thought of as the Dumbledore's army. That's kind of happening slowly in Hogshead.
Yeah, so, and also just general camaraderie, you know, obviously the Three of Cups, you know, obviously we've got our golden trio.
Right.
That are still the core of the story, but now, you know, Harry is, you know, I think in this sort of group is starting to realize he has more allies that are, like, willing to support him.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, because he's felt very lonely for
He's felt the very lonely so, and realizes that he's got Luna, even though he doesn't know her very well. He's got Cho, he's got Ernie McMillan. Like, he has lots of people who are, you know, who are willing to, like, you know, listen to what he's got to say.
Yeah, he has some support he didn't really think he had for a while.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any other thoughts?
No, I mean, that was pretty, I was trying to think of, like, the camaraderie of the Hogwarts staff, but I really couldn't come up with anything. I mean, we don't know of any conversations related. I'm imagining in the faculty room, people were probably like, oh my God, that stuff with Dolores, what a nightmare. But we don't know that that happened. That's just my.
Yeah, I'll know. I don't know which of the, who is actually best buddies with who, but I like to think that maybe Professor Sprout and McGonagall may get together over a cosmopolitan from time to time.
There we go. I was going to say McGonagall and Snape. I don't know why. Just because, I mean, I know that's just like their secret, like, best buds. It's like, I don't know.
You'd be surprised. Yeah, there's a lot of, because, you know, McGonagall taught Harry's parents, which means McGonagall taught Snape.
Oh, wow.
Like, so there's, So yeah, there is that sense. A lot of fan fictions lean into McGonagall trying to be a little bit of a mother figure.
Interesting. All right, man.
All righty then. And so we move on to the Black Moon Astrology card of the day. And the card I picked out was number 26, which is the second house. You know, we've got 12 houses and we've got the second house, which is all about you will own it. The second house is about being grounded in the physical. It is the house of money and is about what you own and movable goods. Ruled by the sign of Taurus, the second house is also a solid reality creature, comforts, lifestyle, and areas supported primarily in the physical realm. It is also the key to your power in the world, how you feel empowered and disempowered.
Hmm.
The second house isn't always to do with money or possessions. It's about ownership of talents, maintaining comfortable shelter, living up to personal values and self-esteem. It is also about what we decide to utilize or manifest in the physical realm, the desired result of which always be quantifiable rewards, comfort, and also familial happiness. So that's an interesting way to put it, because it is ownership. It is the ultimate. It was Hermione's proposal, but ultimately it is Harry taking ownership of his specific niche and abilities.
Right. I'm glad you said Taurus, because I was like, this is a very Taurus house, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was trying to, I mean, there's not a lot of, I'm just trying to think about earthly things. I'm a little lost in the woods on this one tonight. Yeah. I'm not going
to
lie.
So when this card turns up, it's time to concentrate on more practical issues. How do you handle finances? How do you look out for yourself and yours in terms of shelter? How are you being rewarded? Are you making a good living at what you love? So if anything, like, again, in terms of pure practicality, Hermione is taking the initiative of, we legitimately need to do something like this.
Yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Oh, no, it's just that Hermione has realized that, you know, as much as she wants to, or even the way she wants, like, Harry to even go to Dumbledore about, like, you know, they're his hand. Like, Hermione realizes that there's nothing, like, politically that Dumbledore, McGonagall, or anyone can do right now.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, I guess we're doing this shit ourselves.
I was thinking, like, Harry needs to get his head out of the clouds, stop thinking about Cho all the time, and start getting real. Like, come on, man.
Mm-hmm. It's a time where you need to protect resources to manage the things you own in a mature and equitable way. When this card presents itself in a spread, it's about sowing seeds for a good harvest. It is time to build, accumulate, toil, and manage. You may be at a stage to take the beginning steps of opening your own business or embarking on a path that will not only enable you to realize your dreams, but could also make you a fortune in doing so. Again, just, you know, the whole seed of, you know, the, you know, just, again, if we want to get super sociological and anthropological, like, just creating groups around a common goal and creating groups of like-minded people, like, that, even if it's something completely apolitical and innocuous, again, even as innocuous as a freaking fantasy fandom.
Right,
you know, tyrants are terrified of people meeting together and talking. Right. And which is why, you know, so many, you know, places with autocrats and tyrants and authoritative, you know, dictators, like, they put so much energy in suppressing civil society, even to groups. Like, I remember there was one really ridiculous article about, you know, certain Iranian authorities, like, shutting down or, like, putting an end to a yoga club in Iran, like, trying to portray it as, you know, which is also as equally as stupid and something they might do, like, because it was, like, a mingling of the sexes when traditionally you're supposed to. But really what it is about is just any form of civil society, any form of people gathering is, and people talking together is powerful. And, you know, tyrants are always scared that, you know, in between discussing Harry Potter and Game of Thrones, that people are actually talking about, you know, remember, do you know what this bastard, you know, what stupid law he passed in Parliament the other day?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that is always a terrifying thing. I mean, I think in kind of less of a global scale and more just a some situations I've been in, there was frustration by the powers that be that the people, the underlings, were having conversations that were not related to a thing, at a you know, very specific mm-hmm. things. So I'm being as vague as I can, but yeah, it's a ridiculous form of control.
Yeah. And if anything, you know, and I acknowledge that, like, again, sociologically and anthropologically, again, forming groups, you know, and talking is very critical, like, to our socialization, everything. And a lot of people who were, like, not wanting to deal with, you know, their lives being disrupted by the pandemic with masks and shutdowns and everything, you know, basically would draw upon that as a justification for that, you know, that's not what we're built for, socializing. But it's like, you know, again, my counterpoint always and still is the fact that you can still meet on Zoom and talk about things. No one is saying that you can't meet, you know, and talk about things. You can't do it in person or with certain right. guidelines. But, like, no, I guess, and it's just a really, even though it shouldn't, you know, make this collaboration, I guess just the physicality, even though obviously you can perfectly capable of speaking, the physicality of covering your mouth and how people just immediately think that is a symbol for, like, you know, for taking your voice away, even though, you know, does a medical mask take your voice away? No. Or do certain lockdowns stop you from Zooming to talk about everything from, you know, Star Trek to what went on in Congress the other day? No.
Right.
Yeah. And specifically as a pod, and, you know, for us as podcasters, it would bottle my mind because every week, you know, I'm editing and putting our voices and our conversations out into the world. And so people saying that, oh, we can't meet, we can't talk anymore, they want us to be sheep, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like,
shit, we haven't even met each other in real life. like, come on, people. Like, so obviously we've managed to, you know, build a relationship without meeting each other in person.
Yeah. So anyway, that's kind of, you know, how I, you know, my thoughts in regards to the second house and all that's going on in Harry's new hobby.
Yeah. Harry's new hobby. Man, it's an intense hobby. Got a lot of repercussion.
Yep. Alrighty then. And then we move on to our final exercise, fan fiction time.
That huge sigh. So I don't know why I thought this, but I genuinely thought that the Defensive Against the Dark Arts teacher might be Hagrid. So, like, that might be what they would sneak off and lead to. He's got no problem being in Hogsmeade, like, whatever. So what if Hagrid was secretly, like, this Defense Against the Dark Arts genius?
Oh, so what if Hagrid was sort of took the lead in their little rebellious group?
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
I think he would be like, when in doubt, squish him.
Yeah, there we go. He has an easy solution. I don't know why he was the first one that came to mind. Probably because he's been so absent from this.
And I think it's, again, it's also the sense that Hagrid's character plays into the archetype of the gentle giant. And from my experience with the comparison of personality between big dogs and small dogs, big cats and small cats, big horses and little horses, you know, bigger animals are usually have more chill and zen personalities because they don't have to prove themselves because right. they know I could crush you or I could kill you anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and so, in fact, my two cats, my big cat Gyro, who is a big lazy bum who just likes to lay in my lap all the time and generally doesn't like to fight or be that active. And then my cat Xanthippe, who is smaller, you know, normally she's the one that's most energetic and likes to play fight. But if there's actually a quote unquote real situation at hand, like if a stray cat comes on occasion wanting food, we don't let that cat in. But if they see that cat in the window, the cat that likes to play fight and is typically the most aggressive one goes running away into the bedroom. And my cat Gyro, who's usually such a lazy bum, would literally growl like, you know, that if there was no window in between that my cat would just fuck that stray up.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, I thought that
so,
I just
so yeah. So going off and, you know, talking about my cat's personalities, the point is I think that that would feed into the fact that, you know, Hagrid's personality is so gentle because he doesn't have to prove anything, and it doesn't diminish the fact that he could, you know, be a badass and is a badass and, you know, just lets it out at very specific times. And teaching the kids is a time where that would be appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes good sense. I like that.
And he would also use an excuse as, well, you know, kids, like, Death Eaters may enlist the help of dark creatures. So here, go try fighting this, whatever.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. What was your fan fiction this week?
My fan fiction was, I had two. One would be, what if Sirius had shown up?
Oh my God. Like, I don't know how much more drama they need in their life, but I wonder how they would have handled that. Probably, I mean, not everybody knows that he takes the form of a dog.
And that's the kind of the thing. It's like, if anything, you know, their suspicion is that the only people, the way that the tip off got to the ministry was because of the Malfoys. And so if anything, there is the possibility that as long as Sirius, and they told Sirius that it was probably the Malfoys. So, like, it technically could have been, like, Sirius could have said that, you know, I made sure to stay out of, you know, stay out of sight of that Malfoy kid. And other than that, because there's really, and Crabbe and Goyle, of course, but we don't know of any other people in Hogwarts, with the exception of Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle, who have fathers that are, like, currently in cahoots with Voldemort now.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, I could just see, like, you know, Sirius following them as a dog into Hogsmeade and then going on the lesser trodden road of the Hogshead and then, like, basically just sitting with them as a dog in the bar, being present for this whole conversation.
That would probably, I mean, yeah, if it wasn't so risky, that would probably be a very good idea for him, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I had another one of, what if they could get Lupin to teach them? Again, if we exclude, you know, again, Lupin is probably very busy with the order and stuff. But in terms of, like, the physicality of it, like, Lupin knows perfectly well how to smuggle himself into the castle when he needs to.
Yeah.
So it's not, and, you know, with Dumbledore and, like, the other members of the order, like McGonagall, you know, they wouldn't have had a problem with it. So, like, with the exception of, like, being too busy, like, physically, Lupin could have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, it would take some pressure off of Harry, too, because I think that's something that I don't know if, you know, he's got enough to think about. Like, this is just, like, let's stack it up for him. So that would probably be, he would probably appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think, just continuing where they left. Where they left off with, you know, maybe teaching them all Patronuses.
That would be, I'm sure they would all very much appreciate that, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yep. Yeah. All right. But yeah, that's all I've got in regards to my fanfics. Yeah, I've been on again, delusions of trying to distract from the dumpster fire. I'm on doing all sorts of fanfics in my head, like, and I lay up at night thinking about the really hard questions of, what if Lucius Malfoy had a sister?
I think that there is space for that.
Like, what if she broke away from the family like Sirius did? What if she ran off and was doing stuff in Romania and the Balkans? And what if she came back? And what if she was part of the Order of the Phoenix?
Again, I think people would probably be very interested to hear somebody like you, your take on that. So,
yeah. Anyway, and thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Pups. Tune in next time, and we shall be going over chapters 17 and 18, which is Educational Decree number 24 and Dumbledore's Army. What could that possibly be?
Who knows? Who knows?
Alrighty. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.